All right. Okay.
Chris Eagle.
Thanks, Len. Okay, I'm Chris Eagle. Here's my contact information. I'm going to talk about a reverse engineering tool. I call it the x86 emulator plugin for IDA Pro. So, if you're familiar with IDA Pro, this hopefully will help you out. If you're not familiar, this will serve as a good introduction to what the tool's all about. So, IDA Pro, Interactive Disassembler Pro, available there from the good folks at Data Rescue. It's one of the premier disassembly tools for reverse engineering. So, it takes your binaries, opens it up, does an awful lot of analysis on them, and lets you get to work at looking at what compiled code does. I use it in, say, malware analysis, viruses, and things like that, what these things do whenever you don't have source code. Handles an awful lot of families of assembly language, but I deal mostly in the x86 world, which is why this thing came about. Runs on Windows for the time being, but a Linux version is in the works, so that's kind of nice. So this thing is a plug-in for IDA Pro. IDA, again, is very robust. It offers scripting languages. You can write plug-ins that you can load up and run to do an awful lot of work. And this thing does emulated execution of x86 instructions. So IDA is showing you all this stuff, all this disassembled code, and the plugin allows you to sort of step through it. It's not a debugger. Okay, the latest version of IDA includes a debugger for Windows code. Okay, this is strictly emulated x86 code. So you can load up Linux binaries, you can load up OpenBSD binaries, x86 code, and it runs it. It's completely operating system independent because we're down at the machine level. It's written in C++. It currently packaged as a Visual C++ 6.0 project, but I hope to get it morphed over to do GCC for Cygwin and that sort of stuff. And you can get it there at SourceForge. So I did this because I was taking apart a piece of software and for the umpteenth time and decided that stepping through code by hand was starting to suck. When you're trying to keep track of what registers hold what and you're looking up all the operations codes because you want to make sure you get everything right and your flags and all this other stuff. So I thought, gee, it'd be nice if something did all that for me. Okay, and so I started thinking, okay, this plugin might do that for me as I work through the code. And a lot of anti-reverse engineering techniques, if you look at different viruses, and they're protected by different kinds of obfuscation tools or sort of encryption wrappers, things like that, which I'll talk a little bit about. They try to obfuscate the code pass by jumping into the middle of instructions. And so even with IDA, the disassembly may not look as clean as you like it. Okay, and you still have to figure out, where am I going next? Where's my control path? So this thing detects those automatically because you actually execute the instruction. You know exactly where you're going to end up next. Okay, it advances the cursor and reorganizes your code for you. And you'll see that in some of the demos that come up. It turned out in the process of building this that the plugin actually becomes sort of a very generic unwrapping tool for all of these obfuscator tools. UPX, if you've heard of it, Universal Packer for executables, MyDoom, okay, UPX, all these things. BurnEye is a Linux tool, older generation. Shiva is a pretty new next generation Linux tool. TLOC, ASPAC, all these things. And we can walk right through this stuff. Okay, most of these things don't make any library calls, which is ideal because I don't trace into libraries right now. They don't make any library calls because they're just wrapping, somebody's binary. Okay, and all they do is they attach themselves to the original binary as a decompressor, decryptor, what have you, unwrapper, and make no library calls. So you walk right through this stuff. Okay, it modifies the original binary, and by the time you get to the end of this decryption loop, you're now in IDA, you can see the original binary, okay, without having to load it up and run it and capture it with LordPE or whatever tool you're using to grab it out of memory, right? Which I just don't like running software that I don't know what it does, especially viruses, right? So it's a great generic thing. You load it up, you go to the entry point, you start stepping through, and eventually you're going to have something that looks like the original code, hopefully. TLOC is problematic, and I'll talk about some things in the to-do list later on. So the idea was to get at these protected executables. Most viruses and worms are protected like this. And frequently, and I don't know why, they're just a tweaked version of UPX. UPX is actually one of the easiest things to unroll because UPX will unroll itself, right? You can give it a couple command line switches and it'll unroll itself. So people came up with some tweakers. You know, once you UPX something, it goes in, twiddles some bits, and now it breaks UPX's decryption, okay, without changing the algorithm. So you can actually script UPX pretty easily. But again, this thing blasts right through it because it just doesn't care. So, you know, if you're doing some static reverse engineering, the challenge is get past this protection. Okay, we know it's protected. The question is, what does the underlying code do? What does that nasty virus do, okay, on your system? And the emulator lets you get to that point. And so how does it work? Well, you know, in IDA Pro, and I'll get to some demos hopefully integrated with the slides here, you're going to load your binary of interest, right? IDA, if you've never seen it at work, does an awful lot of analysis on the binary right off the bat. It's great. It tries to recognize function boundaries. It assigns, you know, automatically generated names to functions, stack arguments, variables, and so on, like, you know, function parameters and all this. And then what IDA is really doing is it's taking every byte of a program, every byte of a binary, and shoving it in a database and tagging it with all kinds of attributes. Okay, so IDA, you know, in a sense, is really nothing more than a database manipulation program. Okay, so what the plugin does, so it does all that stuff. Okay, and the plugin is helps you just interface to this database. Okay, you extract, you know, the database serves as the plugin's virtual memory space. Okay, and you extract program bytes out of the IDA's database, and then you pass them off to the execution engine in the plugin and ask them to run it. Okay, so IDA is the memory, the plugin interacts with the memory, and it steps through and it maintains state in the plugin. What are we doing? And then it interfaces with IDA to have it modify the display as you walk your way through. So obfuscated code can be challenging anywhere. It is still challenging for IDA, although IDA still probably does the best job of any tool out there. In most cases with obfuscated code, you only get sensible output from IDA for the entry point to the program and shortly thereafter. And then if they do some of these jumping into the middle of instructions, it'll start to lose its way. And then you have your work cut out for you, and you're reorganizing the code manually perhaps. In these cases, that entry point is the unwrapper. So all of the actual program that's been obfuscated and protected will generally appear as data to IDA. So you'll just see big chunks, blocks and blocks of hex data. Okay? And you know, you need that to be code. You want to see what it really was. Flow analysis is made difficult by jumps to the middle of instructions. So the plugin will hopefully help us work through that, right? The plugin architecture itself is really just two pieces. There's a user interface, which gives you the Windows GUI dialogs and handles your mouse clicks and lets you enter some stuff into registers, and you can change the register settings and so on. And then there's the x86 emulator itself, which is really platform independent. There's some, you know, if-def stuff. If you're working in IDA, that it fetches out of the IDA database. But when you're not working in IDA, you can actually tie the program, the emulator, into your own code and just fetch out of a block of arbitrary memory. So that's really helpful because after you step through the thing in IDA for a while, okay, you can recognize, hey, the entry point's here, or you can build yourself, say, a little ELF loader, load a binary, okay, into memory, and then point the emulator into your memory block, and then run it that way. You can run this thing, use the emulator piece completely outside of IDA, and build generic unwrappers. So once you know how to unwrap, say, UPX, okay, I'm going to pick the entry point out of the PE, okay, and I know that UPX runs, you know, some odd, it's a couple hundred instructions, but the big thing is that at the end it jumps back up to the beginning of the binary. Okay, so I can write a loop that loads the executable into, I can write a program that loads the executable into memory, points at the start, at the entry point in that binary, and invokes the emulator over and over again until EIP precedes the entry point, and then stop, freeze, save the memory image out to disk, and now you've got the unprotected binary sitting on your disk. Okay, so the two-piece nature lets you use it in IDA to discover a general purpose, what are some conditions I can use to run through the emulation. And then if you have an ELF loader or a PE loader, you can marry that with your emulator and build generic unwrappers. Okay? And I'll point you towards one that I did in the reference section. Okay, but all the emulator does is it's got a couple entry points. You tell it where to fetch from. Okay, tell it what the entry point is. Okay, that's all it needs to know. You know, where you want EIP to be. And then you invoke, you know, it's basically a single-stepping engine. It saves state, the CPU registers state, and you just repeatedly invoke it, execute the next instruction, fetching from the memory that I pointed you at. It provides, you have to provide your own stack, okay, outside of the emulator. Okay, so when you set up the emulator, you say, here's my program space and here's my stack space, or give me X amount of stack space, and it'll maintain a small stack for you as you step through the code. And you'll see that when I get into the demo here. So the console will bring up the plugin in a minute in IDA, and the console sort of looks like this, and I'm not a UI person, so you know, forgive me. But basically, you get the register displays up there. I just sort of hide the segment registers because, you know, often you don't really need to mess with them. Okay, but they're back there, and you can map segment registers if you really want to. Over on the right-hand side, we can step through one line of code. We can just bypass entire sections or reset the reset EIP by hitting jump, putting the cursor on a line, and hit jump. Okay, it just that all that does is set EIP to the cursor location. We can skip instructions if we want to. Okay, let's suppose we get to a branch, and without worrying about what the register contents are, okay, we know that we don't want to take the branch. Just hit skip, you bypassed it, you don't have to do any thinking. Okay, if you want to skip five instructions, skip, whatever. If you get to a library call, because I don't descend into libraries, okay, unless of course it's statically linked and then you just follow through, right? But if you get to a library call or a system call invocation and int3, okay, you might want to skip, and knowing what the result should be, okay, maybe you're going to fill in some register values and then press on. You can run to cursor. Okay, that can be dangerous because if you never get there, you're out in, you know, la la land, right? You're never going to get back because I don't ever check for user interrupt, which I probably should. And which is why at the moment the run button is disabled, because I don't have any kind of breakpoint features. That's one of the things to do. I'd like to be able to set breakpoints and just arbitrarily run this thing, right? Maybe we don't know where we're going to end up. But run to cursor is nice for getting to the other side of loops, right? Once you recognize a loop boundary, set your cursor, first statement following the loop, run to cursor, go, because it's really a pain to step through a loop 10,000 times. Hide just hides this thing, because I'm not a Windows UI person and I didn't hook up the X button up there. Dump lets you specify a range of virtual addresses, start point and end point, in the IDA database, and then lets you dump that range down to the disk. Okay, just extract it out of the database as the raw bytes with no IDA flags and such like that. And then push data is, you know, it's the crude first iteration of letting you get data onto the stack. So if you want to know what a function does and you know it takes some parameters, you can just push the parameters, hit push data, type in your parameters, go. It pushes them, you know, right to left order like a C function would. Push them on the stack, adjust ESP, and now you're ready to step through the function, and I'll show you an example of that here in a little bit. It doesn't do anything with dynamic memory, a heap, right now. Okay, you can fake some heap operations by grabbing a bunch of space on the stack. Okay, and then like if you hit a malloc and you know they're only going to ask for 32 bytes, okay, bang, grab 32 bytes off the stack, and then stick the address of that stack space into EAX. Okay, you know, you jury-rigged a malloc. Okay, not the best. It's best if you know you want to do this stuff to grab a bunch of space at the top of the stack first. You know, so that you can run your program up on top or below it or however you like to view the stack. Okay, so we're going to do some demos. Alt-F8 is going to bring this thing up. EIP gets initialized to wherever your cursor is at the moment, and then just step and go, right? The plugin is going to tell, it interacts with IDA and says every time you hit a code boundary, basically wherever EIP rests after you step, it says, hey, IDA, that's the start of a piece of code. So when you jump into the middle of an instruction, okay, the plugin's going to say, well, an instruction starts in the middle here, so reorganize yourself. And you'll see the code reshape itself as you step down through this, you know, obfuscated flow path that you know somebody has come up with. And it sort of defeats this jump to the middle of an instruction. Run the cursor, I talked about that. You supply your own stack, no dynamic memory. So I'm going to do a simple demo first here with UPX, one of the most common obfuscators. It's reversible, we talked about that. So let's see if I can make the right thing come up. Okay, I'm a little working lower resolution, so let me fix this up. And yeah, the plugin may occupy the whole screen at this point. This is UPX. This is what it looks like. You can see over here that IDA recognized exactly one function called start. I apologize for the font. I know it's small, but IDA doesn't give you any choice. There are basically no recognizable strings. I'll make sure that's, in fact, the case in the binary. So IDA runs, assuming I'm at the bottom of the window, IDA runs strings for you. Okay, for those that don't know, that it just runs through a binary and looks for. You can set it, but by default, I think it's 4 ASCII characters in a row and throws them up there. Okay, right now it doesn't see anything. Okay, and hopefully, if the demo works, we'll actually get to see something. If I was to page up, wait a minute. Okay, we see some interesting data-like things here. A lot of duplicated blocks of data, things like that. There's a lot of data down here. Okay, there's not a lot of code showing. In this. This isn't, you know what? This isn't UPX. Hang on. That's Burneye. Okay, this one's UPX. Okay. UPX, this is packed with UPX, and there's a dead giveaway. You know, the segment name over here is UPX, and so, you know, this stuff isn't hard. There are some strings that show. Okay, primarily libraries that it wants to load, a couple key function names. But again, if we were to page up, okay, it's nothing but data, right? Well, mostly. Okay, so cross your fingers. Okay, here's the plugin. And my cursor is sitting over here on start 408760. You can see that's where EIP is, and we can start. Now, UPX is a really clean decrypting loop. Okay, so you're not going to see, and you see the cursor walking down the left side of the screen as I'm stepping through, and you can try and catch the registers as they go. Okay, and you know here we have an instance of a loop, right? IDA shows you the control. Once you get to here, back up to here, and I don't really want to loop around, so we can just put the cursor down here. Okay, run the cursor. Okay, and thank God it came back, and keep stepping. Okay, again, another loop. That looks like we already got out of that. Keep going, keep going, keep going, and that's monotonous. So if we work our way down, okay, we can at least get down to here. Okay, here's a loop endpoint. Run the cursor some more, and I gotta decide how far I wanna go with this. I think we wanna do this, get down to here. And then it does, this is where it patches up all its library calls, and I'm not going to step through that. Instead, I'm going to jump down to here. This jump at the bottom, this is where it transfers control back to the protected binary, right? And in fact, right now, we could go over here, refresh our strings, and again, crossing fingers. Come on. What's that? Well, I'm hoping to see more strings. If it's gone through the whole decryption loop, we should basically see all the strings now that the original program is using. Okay, because we've hopefully we've recovered the original binary somewhere in here. Now, I'm going to jump down. This is to the transfer control point, and then step from here. And now, you know, IDA is still confused. Okay. If I step again, okay, now you can see it's doing a lot of analysis up here. Okay, just filled in a lot of new stuff as code. I'm going to turn this into a function. Okay, it does a little more analysis. And if I go over to And this thing always sits on top. You can see now over in the names window, I have all kinds of new strings. Okay, I'm going to have to refresh this window. Basically, you have to tickle IDA sometimes to get it to reanalyze. I could have done it off the menu. But now you see I got new strings. Okay, Slackbot, and some of you may have heard of that. Okay, downloading done. You see format strings, all this stuff that we didn't see before. Okay, so I'm back to the original binary, and I'm sitting at the entry point of the original binary right here. Okay, IDA doesn't recognize it as such. Okay, sub, you know, normally you see something like underscore start or something like the entry point, but that is in fact it. And now we can pick up with actual reverse engineering, what does this malicious code do? We're beyond the packer. Okay, even if IDA had been broken with UPX scrambled, something like that, right? So, pretty simple demo, UPX. Okay, and we'll just blast that out of here. Okay, what's next? Okay, Burnite was an early ELF protector from Taso. Okay, it actually takes the entire UPX. Attaches itself sort of like a parasite to the original binary, okay, and becomes the entry point function to the original binary. Okay, Burnite does something different. It actually takes the original binary and just embeds it as a chunk of data, okay, ELF headers and all, inside of the Burnite protection. Okay, then Burnite, you know, encrypts it a little bit, and then so when you run Burnite, it first decrypts it and then acts as an ELF loader and loads that thing into memory and jumps to it that way, okay, invokes the entire separate ELF. So the memory image of a Burnite protected binary is exactly the original binary, okay, once you get it back out, unlike UPX. If you ever, you know, some of you have probably done this, but if you unroll a UPX binary like we just did, that's exactly how it will appear in memory. Okay, it's exactly how you'd get it out of Lord PE. Okay, if anybody has used that tool. If you use UPX to unroll the binary, you get a totally different picture. You get the actual original binary, not the binary as it will run in memory. Okay, so there's a slight difference here. Burnite gives you the original binary back. So let's try and do Burnite. I think ended up down here. So this thing is a Burnite, and you can see all the data down here. Burnite works slightly differently. So okay, got a new instance of the plugin. And again, in Burnite's case, you better have some arguments or I'm going to underflow the stack. So we push like an argc. We'll just say there's, you know, one argument, and I'm just going to give it some space just to make sure I don't underflow. Okay. And you'll see all this data go onto the stack. Okay, the stack grew, ESP decremented. You know, argc is sitting over here down at the end. And I'm ready to start stepping. Okay, make sure I'm on start. And away we go. And basically this works to where you want to find a loop. Okay, so once IDA shows me a loop, okay, and we're starting to get a glimpse of one down here, I see an inner loop, and yeah, there's, you know, XORing with a bunch of stuff, XORing decrement, XORing add. You know, these are things that you like to see, right? Loop endpoint, so I'll run to cursor over here. And we're basically about done with that. We could step through a couple more things. Now, you know, I jumped into the middle of data. As soon as I start stepping, okay, the plugin forced that to convert the code so I don't have to bother with it. We keep on going. It's doing some things where it's stepping through argc stuff and assuming I don't seg fault, we'll be all right. Okay. And I'm going to hide this for now, and I'm going to see where we are. Okay. Refresh the strings window. Okay, for some reason, that's not working. I don't know why. We should actually see a Taso banner in there. Let's see. I'm going to bring it back up and keep going. Hopefully we'll get through here quickly. Maybe not. Return. turn this into a function, can't do it. I may have to bail out of this demo. Well, actually, you can see where IDA is starting to make sense of things. Okay, you can see it's showing you the Linux system calls that are getting made at this point. Okay, and you know why the strings window is not refreshing, I have no idea. So I'm out of luck over there. I don't know why. Okay, there are tricks you can do. You know, now you have to know where to go find the BurnEye, the embedded binary, and there's a way to do that. But you have to, in theory, you have to spend some time reversing what you have now. Okay, see where it accesses the binary, see where it loads it up. It's embedded down here, and I'm not going to go search for it. Okay, but you could dump it down to disk. Okay, and fortunately, I did that last night. So, what you can ultimately end up getting back to is this is just a block of memory that got dumped right out of IDA using the dump feature. Okay, and you see, you know, start just like you'd expect to. It is the straight ELF. It's a contiguous block of data that was dumped after I ran through the BurnEye decryptor. And you can see that, indeed, you have some strings over here. Okay, and this is just a toy little program that would happen to be encrypted with BurnEye. Okay, I'm not looking at any time limits. How am I doing? Okay. Okay, keep going. All right, BurnEye, we're done with. Okay, back to this guy. So Shiva is really what prompted me to do this. It's sort of a next generation binary protector for ELF executables. It offers multi-level encryption to protect the binary. They do a polymorphic stage one decryptor, so it doesn't look the same all the time. They do obfuscated code paths. It's got an optional password AES protection for a second level of encryption. Okay, and then it has a third level of encryption where it acts like a sort of a paging virtual memory kind of thing. It only brings small blocks of code into memory at any given time. So, you know, the idea of capturing it out of proc PID, right, and going in there and just copying memory blocks, you can't do it. Okay, because they do this crazy, you know, mutual ptracing stuff, so you can't even attach to it with ptrace after a thing has started running because it's already ptracing itself. Okay. So this is really, you know, is the only way I came up with to get at this stuff was static reverse engineering, right? And then so for the third stage, before they ever bring these blocks into memory to run them, they remain encrypted in memory. Okay, they do just-in-time decryption as they load the block into memory. Okay, and they only load a finite number. About a third of the total program can fit in their memory space, so you're never going to capture the whole thing at one time. And so they use a tiny encryption algorithm, TEA. Okay, for those last blocks, and they have embedded keys for those. So before you can reverse engineer that stuff, you got to recover the keys. Okay, and so they have key recovery functions. There's about five of them for the five different types of blocks, and so the key recovery functions are as obscure as the stage one decryptor. So there's a couple different things that this turned out to be useful for. You know, jumping into the middle of instructions looks sort of like that. You can see here the two circled instructions. You know, this jumps to some location plus two, okay, down here. This instruction plus two somewhere in the middle. This jumps to some location plus one. That's what it looks like to jump into the middle of instruction. And you get that for conditional jumps because, you know, you have to go to the next one in case the branch isn't taken. So you have to treat that, you know, push as an instruction and it throws off the code, right? This move here has to be the fall through right here. That's the fall through when this branch isn't taken. That's why IDA can't sort it out, okay? Because you have to have the branch not taken case. Well, that's the next instruction. But then when the branch is taken, it happens to jump right into the middle, okay? And that's how they'll try to trip you up, okay? So first we're going to step through the initial Shiva stuff. And I think I'm left with Shiva over here. Let's reorganize the windows. Okay, a lot of just junk over here in the strings. There's nothing. They reveal nothing in the strings window. Okay, whatsoever. Okay, so again, bring up the plug-in, and I bookmarked a couple locations in the code that we'll get back to. Again, we just want to start stepping. Okay, and away it goes. 4 minutes? Okay. And you can see that, you know, we're going to run out of space real soon here. We haven't even seen a loop, okay? And, you know, now we're in the middle of data that gets reorganized, okay? And it's self-reorganizing as you hit code boundaries, okay? I found that kind of useful. It does a lot of, you know, XOR and add, and we're working our way down here. You know, a lot of these are useless operations. So if you're stepping through, and this is what ticked me off with this particular thing, reversing it, it's all useless, right? They'll modify EAX, and then 3 lines later, they'll reload it from scratch without ever having used the result. So you're wasting your time, okay? But this is a lot quicker, okay? And so things are formatting nicely. We're starting to see loops. We're starting to see more code, okay? And unfortunately, with the screen resolution the way it is, there's a loop that's going on over in here. Okay, so I'm going to jump past it, just run the cursor here. Okay, and we made it that far. Now we've got to step until we see the next loop organize itself. Okay, and there we got it. It's going to jump back up to the top, so we'll run the cursor here. And I should sort of stop over here, set up, see if we've gotten any strings. Okay, you can see there's at least one string right there that's popped out of the code, okay, so far. And hopefully, okay, my EIP is still where I left it. Okay, we're working our way through. It decrypts in 3 loops, so that's what we got to get past. Decrypts 3 blocks of code. So we're creeping up on the last loop. Okay, this one takes a while. Okay, the emulator doesn't run at the speed of heat. Okay, so we were waiting. That was the biggest block of code that it's got to decrypt. And this is, I can do this again. Look for more strings. See? Mostly there's something down there called check me now. Okay, and now we're going to step a couple more times. We work our way down to the end. Okay, they've set up the stack and they return and we set up a function and now watch. Come on, you can do it. I'm going to hide this thing, and instead, I guess I'm going to force it to analyze and see if that'll work. Nope. Okay. Keep stepping. Ah, well. It's there. Start working our way down. Okay, you can see it's recognizing other functions down here. Okay, and we have code to start evaluating. If I scroll through all this, there are still blocks of code that you're going to need to step into and start manually rearranging. Until you hit it with the plugin, it doesn't reorganize itself. Okay, but you can, like this one here. Okay, this one hasn't been reorganized because it jumps into a code block. So if we go undefine this code block, and you know people who do use IDA know how to do this. Okay, now it now knows where it needs to go. It goes there, and we turn that into a function, and away we go. Okay, so we're a little closer, and I don't know if not being any friendlier on the strings. Okay, check me is over here. Okay, there's a few others, and I'm probably not going to get into key recovery because I think we're running out of time, so let me jump back to the talk, finish that up. Okay, I can talk about key recovery to anybody offline. Basically, you have to find where the key recovery functions are. You set up the stack, you give it a buffer of 16 bytes on the stack, give it a pointer, and then run the key recovery function, and the keys will spit out right there in your stack window of the plugin. Okay, and then you can use that later on in decrypting the rest of the blocks. So you can decrypt all of the blocks because you have the keys, and then you can start to rebuild the original binary. Okay, so we did that. Things to do. I'd like to get breakpoints implemented. I'd like to try to handle library calls, try to get some heap functionality. Windows exception handling, because I think it's TLOC that actually generates exceptions as it unwraps. So you want to be able to handle the exception in here, you know, with FS all set up to go to an exception handler and so on, and then do all that business. So I think that's about it. You can read the rest. I'll post these online. And question time.
And now we do Q&A.
So you already sort of answered my other question about TLOC, but what have you found with ASPAC on this in terms of
What's
any?
That?
What have you found with ASPAC?
I haven't really played around with ASPAC just yet. So, you know, UPX, TLOC, BurnEye, and Shiva are the four that I've really looked at so far. Okay, it may be tougher than... TLOC is harder to do than Shiva was, frankly. Okay? Next, here.
So are you doing anything with the imports tables?
I am not doing anything with the imports tables. I want to. I have a nice UPX script, an IDC script, that will actually... it undoes UPX using a script, even if it was scrambled, UPX scrambled, and rebuilds the imports table from the script. So I want to try to build that into here as much as I can.
I'm behind the post between you, so you can't see me, but if you stick your head up, hey, back in the corner.
I have no idea.
Okay. So one of the things about IDA, as you know, but a lot of other people don't know, is that it can automatically analyze library functions embedded in the executable. It can figure out the, you know, given header files, it knows, it has an entire database of libraries and function calls it knows about, and it can automatically propagate type information back in the executable. Once you've unrolled something through UPX, for example, does IDA rescan the memory and try to find flirt information and other things like that?
I don't make it do it automatically. I suspect that it could, but I haven't investigated making it do it. And that goes along with trying to rebuild the import table, which was the question up here, and that's another great thing that I'd like to try to work in here when I get the chance.
In the design of your code, are the instructions replaceable?
Are the instructions
the
replaceable?
Instruction set replaceable for working on other processors?
No. The code's a mess. I started out where I thought, you know, I'm going to go rip off somebody else's x86 emulator. And, you know, so I went to look at Box to see if I could bring Box in. And I figured, you know, it's going to take me, I could write one quicker than I'm going to learn Box. Okay? So, my emulator's pretty ugly. It doesn't emulate floating point. It doesn't do any MMX stuff. You know, what's that?
No.
Not, you know, I need to, let's say, fill out the instruction set. Okay, for right now, it does the core instructions that tend to be used in the unpackers.
Right? I have two questions. The first question is, what's the advantage of this over running like something in VMware under Ollie and just setting breakpoints and stuff? That's my first question. And then number two, for the UPX demo, you said you just dumped the binary. But the original P header isn't there, right? Because UPX kind of does object code insertion. So how do you like append a P thing on the front of it and then dump it and make it happen? And
the original PE header...
For BurnEye, it totally works because it's just the ELF
right.
is in there. But
the original PE header, well, it depends on what you want to do. To analyze a binary, you don't need to dump it, okay? Because it's there. You can look at it, okay? For a UPX binary that you've undone this way. It appears in IDA exactly as it appears in, say, your Windows memory. To analyze the binary embedded in BurnEye, you need to dump it because IDA didn't look at that ELF header. So you want to dump it, and then you want to reload it in IDA and have it analyze it that way. So that's the difference on UPX and BurnEye that way. You could dump UPX, but I think in the PE header is still just going to point to the start function. Okay, you'll have all the decrypted code, but you certainly don't want it to run through the start function again because that's just going to destroy everything that was already decrypted. As far as Ollie debug, you know, you can always step through this stuff in Ollie debug. Of course, you can't step through Shiva binary or BurnEye binary in Ollie debug because they're ELFs, right? Okay, you cannot step through a Shiva binary in GDB because the minute it notices it's being ptraced, it's going to quit, okay, because of the mutual ptrace thing, okay? Other things, you can step through them. Some things set up timing loops. There are anti-reverse engineering stuff, like if it takes too long to get from instruction A to instruction B, I'm going to quit, okay, as it might as you're stepping through a binary and setting breakpoints. And personally, I like to work in IDA because I can annotate all kinds of stuff that I really can't do in Ollie debug. okay? And I'll, you know, IDA gives me a great reverse assembly. I can just page up really easy, but, you know, when you're in Ollie, you paging up through memory, it doesn't unravel backwards as well as it does forwards, and that's a trait of all binaries, of all debuggers. They have a hard time going backwards because how long was the last instruction? Right, you know how long this instruction is, so you can work forwards very easily, but working backwards is not so easy. But IDA does a good job of that. Did I answer your question? Okay. I was tap dancing behind here, but you didn't see me.
Have you scripted? I'm right here.
Yes.
Have you scripted some of the stuff so it's automatic? So, like, let's say Shiva, it automatically pulls out the keys, and you just run it, and it dumps everything?
Yeah, I have a program. I actually talked about Shiva at Black Hat. And if you get this link, and I'll post these slides somewhere, either on the plugin site at SourceForge, I'll post these slides, or if the CodeCon folks are going to post slides, I'll certainly get you the slides. Over here, I wrote a scripting a tool. It's a C program that integrates the emulator with an ELF loader, right? An ELF, you know, aware thing, and it automatically strips the Shiva protection and dumps you back the protected binary. So, yeah, I've done it in the case of Shiva, and I'm the exact same methodology would work on UPX, and I'm pretty sure I could do it with BurnEye as well, in a generic sense. So, yeah, the nice thing is, with the emulator, the code is already written, and all you really have to do is write something that has a start condition and a stop condition. When do I want to stop unwrapping? And then dump what you've unwrapped out to memory, and then you've unprotected the binary. Now you can start analyzing it. Yes?
Speaking of something like Armadillo, I've used that in Ollie Debug, and they've got about three different anti-debugging techniques. One where you hit the exception handle, another one where you're going to do a divide by zero.
Mm-hmm.
And with Ollie Debug, you can control whether Ollie's going to handle the exception or not, which will basically make it take the correct path or not.
Right.
Have you thought about allowing a feature where you can flag whether I should take which way to take the branch on an exception in your emulator?
As I said, exceptions are something that I haven't built in yet, so I haven't put a lot of thought into it. But you can skip instructions, and you know whether you want to handle the exception, you can certainly do that by setting up, you know, the FS.
Well, the trick would be keeping state so that I can restart it and then take the opposite branch next time.
I haven't thought about it.
I don't think I know enough to ask a technical question about this, but I was just kind of curious, who's using the ELF obfuscators for Linux binaries these days?
You know, I don't know. I've heard of no cases where Shiva's actually been used in the wild. I can't remember. I think BurnEye was used to protect an SSH exploit, the SSH compensator, you know, CRC32 compensator exploit, a ways back. So, you know, BurnEye has been used, you know, a time or two. There was a rant about BurnEye and the guy who wrote, you know, Burn in Hell in the fake frack, which was kind of funny. So, yes. Okay. Okay. So it's being used.
It's out there.
Yeah, yeah. But there are pretty good automated BurnEye unwrappers out there. You the Burn in Hell one, Burn Dump is a kernel module that'll do it. And Burn in Hell, I can't remember the whole name, but Burn in Hell stands out. That's a pretty nice tool. It actually has a brute force password cracker if you've used the password protection option on BurnEye. So.
Okay, we have time for two more questions.
Or none.
What do you think of IDA's C++ API?
As far as writing plugins?
Yeah.
It's not documented very well. Yeah, lots of globals. Yeah, lots of... I don't mind. I like it. It works. I'm using it to do some decompilation type stuff to where, you know, IDA does a lot of the analysis, and I try to call into there to do some decompilation type stuff. But it's, you know, sometimes I wish there were more functions or other functions. Documentation is the worst part of it. Okay? But other than that, you know, as far as you know, plug-in architectures go, it's one of them, and it's not bad. Okay? So documentation is its biggest weak point. Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I basically, I have the header files open because the header files, what documentation there is for any of you that have done or haven't done this, it exists solely in the header files as you know, comments. So.
Okay. Unless there's a final question, I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you very much.